All right, so I think it's a good time to start. Thank you everyone for coming. I hope you are doing well. So in this lecture, we're going to continue what we did from the last time on variational Monte Carlo. So this lecture is going to be an application of that framework using what we call recurrent neural network wave functions. Okay, so before moving on, I'd like for us to do a quick review of what we saw last time on variational Monte Carlo. So we said the main goal of variational Monte Carlo is to find the ground state of quantum many-body systems. So typically we just need to find the to solve the eigenvalue equation by solving this problem here. And we said that if we were to do this exactly, we would run into trouble because we have an exponential complexity, right? So that's why we needed to reframe the problem. And this was the goal of variational Monte Carlo, where we mapped this eigenvalue problem into an optimization problem, where we propose an ansatz that's going to serve as a target for the ground state we're looking for. So basically, we parameterize a wave function by a bunch of parameters that we minimize over using gradient descent. So basically, just an optimization problem, and we saw that using Monte Carlo, our complexity drops dramatically to a polynomial complexity. Typically, like for applications right now, it's between n to the n to the fifth. So basically, we can, with this complexity, we can solve this problem using classical computers. Okay. And also, the cool thing we saw last time is that if you want to quantify how close we are to the ground state, we just need to look at the variance. So we said if we compute the variance of the local energies, that we can basically compute as this expression here, we just sum over the matrix elements that we can compute very easily. And by multiplying by the ratios of the amplitude and summing over all the sigmas, then we can get the local energies. And then if you compute the variance and you find that's close to zero, then we know that's square conversion. So typically, the graph that you'll see when you do training, so if this is the number of iterations, and if this is the variance, then typically you would say something like that. You see that it's decreasing by time. Okay? So now, the thing I want to start with is something that I didn't talk about much last lecture, which is how do we choose the variational wave function? How to choose the ansatz, psi lambda. Okay? But before moving on, do you have any questions about what we saw last time? Any concern or misunderstanding? Everything's good? Awesome, cool. So we said last time that psi lambda should be expressive enough, meaning that it should have enough computation. So if I look, so let me just finish this, expressive enough. So if this is the space related to the ground state, I should have an ansatz that occupies also enough larger space so that we get close to the ground state. So that's why, and because actually where neural networks has also this expressive power, we usually, in the field of, at the intersection of machine learning and variational Monte Carlo, we take these ansatz as a neural network. It doesn't have to be a neural network, but like people usually take sensor networks as well. But for the sake of this course, we're gonna start with those and see how we can frame this problem in terms of these architectures, okay? So there are a lot of examples of these architectures in the literature. So the first people who started using neural networks for variational Monte Carlo used restricted boson machines that you learned in the lectures by Roger on tomography. So those also can be used to do a variational Monte Carlo. And actually, I would say that this is the people who published this paper were the first to start this field of intersection of machine learning with neural networks and variational Monte Carlo. So this was by Cavallo and Trier in 2016, if you're curious, you can check it out on archive here. Okay, now, not only people use restricted Boltzmann machines that we call RBMs, but also people used feed-forward neural networks. Also convolutional neural networks. And they did also a great job, much better than RBMs because they hold more computational power. And today, I'm going to be talking to you about how we can use recurrent neural networks to that we call RNNs in the framework of variational Monte Carlo. Okay? Does this make sense to everyone? Cool. So that's why in this lecture, in the first part, I'm going to talk about, I'm going to define what is an RNN first. So as an outline for this lecture, in the first part, I'm going to talk about how can we define recurrent neural networks. RNNs. And then you're going to see how we can apply them to variational Monte Carlo. So what would happen? How can we define this relation here? OK, so this is going to be the second part. OK? So now let's start with RNNs. So as you might have known already, like RNNs are actually now the state of the art of language processing. So now if you go into Google and you go to Google Translate, like you're gonna see that it's almost close to the human translation level. And it's actually because of these architectures. So these architectures were originally built for language processing. So you have, as an example, you know, machine translation. Also, like speech recognition. So if you know, if you speak into Google, you're probably speaking to an RNN. So everything is actually built in on this architecture. And also even in music generation. So people actually can generate music with RNNs that looks as similar to real music made by humans. And also in biology where people use it for DNA sequence analysis. So as an example, let's take a typical task of a language process. Let's take a language processing task that's usually when you type a sentence in Google and Google complete the sentence for you. So I'm going to propose an example for that. So if I say, for example, I live in France, then I speak, right? So if I were to type this, if I were to ask any human being about, like tell him about this sentence, the most likely word would be French, right? So the question is, can we do this on, how can we process this sentence into a neural network so that it can predict the word French after we feed in all these words into it, okay? And that's the idea of recurrent neural networks. So to be able to do this type of predictions, what we do is first, we start with a null vector. So it has a bunch of zeros in. And then what we do, we feed that into a neural network. Okay? You don't have to know what's inside this neural network. I'm going to define it in a second. But just think of it as a black box that can take this input and then output a vector. Okay? Probably we need more space here. Okay, I'm going to continue here. So I'm going to feed it into this neural network. And then it's going to output a vector, y, that I'm going to require to be normalized. I'm going to tell you why in a second. And I want the size of this vector to be equal to the vocabulary size. Vocabulary size. So let's say something like 10,000, right? In the typical applications of recurrent neural network, people usually like use hundreds of thousands, but just say for the sake of illustration, it's 10,000. So basically the first input here going to correspond to the first word in English, say A, and the last input would correspond to the last word in English, let's say it's zoo. Okay? I'm just here proposing examples. It doesn't have to be like that. Okay? And the so because this vector is normalized, each input is corresponds to the probability of having that word. Okay? So I'm going to start with P2, P1, P2 until P1000. Because this is normalized, then the sum of all of them will be equal to 1, OK? Let me write it here. So the sum of pi's is 1. OK? So now, since the first word here is I, then I'm going to look into my vector at the position of the word I. So let's say it's been P5000, okay? So I'm gonna pick this probability and then output and take it as the probability of the word I, which is going to be P5000, okay? So now, after I have this probability, what I do is I take the word I, which you can think of it as a vector as well, and you feed it, and you feed it in the same neural network. So you take the same architecture and you replicate it here. And because we use the same neural network, that's why this is called a recurrent neural network, because we keep repeating the same as we go through the sentence, okay, or the sequence. And then we output the same type of vector or with different probabilities because we have different inputs, p prime until p thousand primes. And then because the next word is live, we look at the position, the word live. It's going to be something like position 6,000. And then we output. And this probability is going to be the conditional probability of the word live conditioned on the previous input, which is the word I. And this is P6,000. OK? So now, because we want to interpret as a conditional, this quantity as a conditional probability, we need some sort of connection between these two recurrent neural networks, okay? So that's why we add what we call a memory vector. And that's defined by H. So just kind of a message that's passed between this neural network and this network so that we can know what's the context of this word live in the sentence, okay? So basically we just keep repeating this again and again. So here we feed in I, we feed the word live, and then we do this again and again until we arrive at the last word. which is speak. Okay? We don't have to think about the details. I'm just giving you now the big picture. I'm going to tell you about the details, what's going on here. So I want you to know what's the big picture first before going to the details. So now, once I feed in, yeah, can I erase here? Is okay for everyone? Okay. So once I get this route, I feed in this word, I'm gonna get a vector the same way as this, those one here, and this one. So if you look at the word French in the vocabulary, it's gonna be something like, let's say here, so this is the word, the position of the word French. This would correspond to the position, like let's say 4,000, right? And so typically we would expect that this probability is very high. So let's say it's about 0.99, okay? So high. So if our neural network is trained enough, it would give us a very high probability here. High probability. So because this probability is high, what we do is we say, this is the next word, okay? So let's say here, this is the next word. And P4000 will be exactly the probability, the conditional probability of the word French, conditioned on all the words that were before. I live until speak. Okay? That's typically what happens in Google search. When you type a sentence, that's basically what happens. So it sequentially inputs the words and gives you the most probable words that's gonna come next. Okay? Now the cool thing about these architectures, so there's a couple of remarks. The cool thing about these RNNs is that they take advantage of what we call. So RNNs take advantage of what we call the probability chain rule. Which is basically saying that if I multiply all the conditional probabilities that you saw there, so pi, p word lev conditioned on the word I, p of the word in conditioned on I and live, until p of the word French conditioned on all the previous words, then so if you multiply all these probabilities together, you're gonna basically get the probability of the full sentence. That's what you call the probability chain rule. Okay? This will be the probability of all the sentence. Okay? This, and you can interpret this as the probability, the sentence, of sentence to make sense. Okay? So now why I'm telling you this, because actually we can apply the same idea to spin systems. So if you were to replace the sentence by spin configuration, so I'm gonna replace it by a sentence. So instead of a sentence, I'm gonna put a chain of spins. So you know here, like if we take just spin 1/2, like you're gonna have two possibilities. So each spin is going to be either up or down, right? So in some sense, here, I would call the spin vocabulary size. So the spin vocabulary size is not 10,000, but it's only 2, okay? So it's much easier in this case. So in the case of language, it's very complicated. You have a very huge vector. But in case of those spin systems, it's much, much easier. It makes sense to try these architectures for the case of quantum many-body physics, okay? And basically here, instead of having a huge vector, that's a vector, you would get instead only a two-dimensional vector where the first input will be the probability of having a spin down, and the next one will be the probability of having a spin up. And the sum of these will be one, okay? And, oh yeah, is there any question?
Yeah.
Yeah.
So shouldn't that the size of that vector be bigger than the size of the vocabulary since you're storing like conditional probability? So it would kind of be like all permutations for those words.
Oh yeah, I see what you mean. So I'm gonna define like here for the moment. I still didn't define what's the content of the neural network. I hope it's gonna become clear in a second. So just I want you to know just how this is processed. I'm gonna tell you in a second how this is defined. And if you don't understand, just ask me again. Okay. So, and also we can apply the same idea here. So if you can apply the chain rule here, we can also apply it on the spin system. So if you want to find the probability of a spin configuration, then I can just decompose it in a product of conditionals. Okay? Until P sigma n conditioned on all the previous spins. Okay? So basically, we can do the same thing. Instead of feeding words, we can just feed in spin configurations, and then we can get the conditional probabilities. We multiply them together, and then we get the probability of the spin configuration. Okay. So now the question is, how do we define that black box there? So how to define the neural network that we said there? How to define okay. So just to recall what we said before, this neural network basically takes two inputs. The first one is the spin configuration, the spin at position. So if we were at step number n, little n, then we would feed in the spin at position n minus 1, and then we would pass the memory state, right, at position h, at position n minus 1, okay? And you would get a new memory state, h at a new one, hn, and then we would get the conditional or the output, the vector yn that you saw here. You saw there actually on the top, okay? It's basically the main building block of a recurrent neural network. So how do we define that? So we can actually decompose this neural network into two blocks. The first, we define what we call an RNN cell that takes this input, sigma n minus 1. It's going to be just either plus or minus 1, okay? And we feed in the previous memory state. And then what this RNN cell gives you is a new memory state, h of n. And this new memory state is copied again to be fed into what we call a softmax layer. I'm going to define that in a second. And then that softmax layer is going to be what outputs this vector, sigma of n. Okay? So now how do we define each of these blocks? So first, we said that h of n is going to be the output of the RNN cell, which takes the previous memory state and the previous spin. And this is going to be simply defined by some application of some nonlinear activation function of some weight matrix applied on the spin configuration, plus some another weight matrix applied on the previous memory state, plus some bias. Okay. So that's a nonlinear activation. And those are just weight, this is weight matrices, and this is a bias, okay? That will be the new memory state, okay? So now once this is computed, we can feed it into a softmax layer. So the output y of n is going to be a softmax layer applied on the new memory state. And that's going to be defined as softmax of a weight matrix, going to be scored U, times the new memory vector H of n, plus the new another bias. Okay. And I should say here, if you have never seen softmax before, it's very simple. Like, if you apply softmax on some vector V, then the ith component will be just the exponential of the ith component of that vector divided by a normalization. So by doing this, the sum of the outputs, the sum of the components of this vector, we're going to sum to 1. And that's exactly why the vector you see there is normalized. So we apply this nonlinear activation function so that the probabilities you see there is normalized, or this one here. This will mostly introduce it in. Okay? So now, if you stare at this equation, you see that it's recursive in h of n, right? So basically, we compute at each step, we compute a new memory state that. And as you see here, we kind of like add in some new information to that memory state. So at each time, we add some information about what happened for the previous spin. That's why we can allow for the interpretation of conditional probabilities here that are outputted by the recurrent neural network. So because this memory state encodes information about the past, then it makes sense to interpret those probabilities as conditional probabilities, okay? So all you wanted to learn from here is that this vector kind of memorizes the history or what happens in the sequence before step n. So h of n is serves as a memory or let's say history of the previous spin configurations. Okay. Also, if you see from this equation, the dimension of that vector is actually a hyperparameter. So if you look at the size of h, so this is h, it's going to contain some numbers inside. So the size of h is actually a hyperparameter. So because we can actually tune the size of this weight matrix, okay? And we expect that the larger this vector is, the more we can memorize about the previous inputs. Okay, so we call the size of the memory state as the number of memory units And we expect that the more is the bigger the size of this vector, the more expressive. So expressivity of the RNA increases. And this is something you're going to check in today's tutorial. When you're going to increase the dimension of this, you're going to see that the accuracy increases more of RNA. OK? So in conclusion, you can summarize all of this here. So by the way, can I erase here? 551? OK. In summary, you can think of the RNN as follows. So you have the RNN defined there. So all of this architecture is what I call here an RNN. Basically, it takes spin configuration. This can be decomposed into, this can be fed in sequentially, and the RNN outputs the probability of that spin configuration that's also computed sequentially by the mean of the chain rule, OK? Computed sequentially. OK? So now the question is, how can we take RNNs, how can we do variational Monte Carlo VMC with RNNs, OK? Because that's the goal we have in this lecture, OK? But before going into details here, do you have any questions so far about anything? Is this clear for you first?
I do have a question.
Yeah, sure.
So you were saying we can adjust our size for our H vector?
Exactly.
When you say adjust the size, you mean adjust V?
Yeah, exactly, yeah. So, okay. So the thing is that if you look at this equation more carefully, like if you're at the first step, you would need like some initial H here, right? Mm-hmm. So you would need some initial values for sigma 0 and H 0. This is going to be just some initialization, like this. You initialize them by zero vectors. That's why it took here as null vector, okay?
Oh, okay.
Because that's exactly going to be sigma zero, or the first word, mm-hmm. Okay? And then here, I didn't say it here, but typically, I didn't write it. But here also, I'm going to feed in some initialization. It's going to be H zero, all right? And I can, from the beginning, I can tell what's the size of that initial vector by tuning the size of this matrix.
Okay.
And but here, I don't have the luxury to change the size because that's defined by the number, the vocabulary size, which is here too. Okay. So I would say here, like, yeah, just to be more careful about the sizes, I'm going to define that just to minimize the confusion. So this vector here, which is the spin configuration, is either 1, 0, that's going to be, let's say, down, or 0, 1, and that's going to be up. Okay, let me write it here. It's better to mention it. Okay, so this is down, and this is up. It's just a way to encode that we have either plus or minus one. It's the same way we encoded words in the vocabulary there. The same idea, okay? So we call it also the one-hot encoding that you've seen in the tutorials before, okay? Do you have any other questions? Is this clear for you? Okay, cool. So now how can we do VMC with these RNNs, okay? So that's going to be the second part of this lecture, which I'm going to call RNN wave functions. OK, so if you recall from the last lecture, we said that if you want to compute the variational energy, we need to take expectation value over the local energies by taking samples from the variational wave function in order to compute this quantity here. So we take some number of samples from the variational wave function, and then we compute this average by the mean of important sampling. So last time I didn't tell you, like I kind of skipped this part, because in this lecture I'm going to tell you how can we do important sampling. So question now, how can we compute or find sigmas that are drawn from psi lambda, okay? That was the question. Because that's, if you were to do that, then we would be able to compute the variational energy and also the gradients, which can be also defined in this way. So to do this, let's first define our variational wave function as an RNN. So I'm going to choose an RNN as a variational wave function. That's first my choice. And then, in order to do importance sampling, in order to compute or to find the set of samples that are drawn from psi RNN, let me do it here. Then, first let me go back to this example here. So if you remember when we first fed in the word speak, basically we got a bunch of probabilities, and the probability of the highest probability was the probability of the word French, right? So basically, because this word has the highest probability, we kind of sampled that word. We can also apply the same idea here. So in the beginning, we start with some initial input, sigma zero, and also h of zero. And then we get a two-dimensional vector, p down, p up. Okay, that's the first vector, y1. And then, let me erase here just to have space. I'm going to take that as, let me write it here. So psi lambda psi RNN, okay? And then here, I sample from this probability distribution. So just imagine I have a coin. The first, each one face has this probability and the other has this probability. And then once I have the result, I know that it's going to be, so the result will be exactly the first spin, okay? Once I have this first spin, what I do, so just to be clear here about notation, like here, sigma one is a vector, which can be also wrote as a number. So because here, so if I get 1, 0, it means I have spin down, which I can denote it by -1. And here, if I have this vector 0 and 1, it's gonna be up or +1. So let's think about this as a vector, okay, for now. So now, once I get this vector, what I do is I feed it back to the same architecture I defined over there. And I get a similar vector. It's going to be y2. It's going to define another set of probabilities. And then I do the same thing. I sample. And I get sigma 2. And I do this again and again and again until the end of the sequence. Yeah, and also here I need to pass vectors from one RNN cell to another, or from one neural network to another, defined. So the neural network is the same as I defined there. So basically I do the same thing until I arrive at before the last one. So when I arrive at sigma n minus 1, also I'm going to get a two-dimensional vector. So p up, p down. And then I'm going to sample to get sigma n. Okay. So as you see here, we kind of sampled each, like the full spin configuration sequentially one by one. So at the end, what we get is exactly a spin configuration sigma. So that's sigma, where each one of them is like a spin configuration in this full spin configuration. Okay, so. Let me comment first on one thing here before moving on. So, yeah, you have any questions? Yeah.
Yeah. So, like thinking about when we were talking about like the language stuff. Like
exactly.
Output was like the probability of live given I.
Exactly.
Here, our output is a spin.
Oh yeah. Sorry about that. Yeah. So basically, what I said there.
Yeah.
So the output actually is actually the vector y, okay? So what I said there is that we just pick that probability, but the output of the RNN is exactly that's the y, which is a probability distribution over all the vocabulary. But here we can do also the same thing. So assume like the first spin is down. So basically the probability of that spin will be this one, okay? If this is up, the probability will be this.
So are we generating a spin configuration, or are we?
Yeah. So actually, yeah. That's what I'm going to do in a second. So we're actually generating a sequence and also predicting its probability.
Okay. So, but like, sorry, I just want.
Yeah. Of course. Yeah.
So like, when it's outputting, so we have like a spin configuration with the sigma 0, 1, 2, 3, 4. And so when you get to the sigma 1. Is that sigma one, you're just choosing the highest probability of the y, like the output of?
Oh no, here like I'm flipping a coin. So basically I just take a coin and each face has this, so the first face has this probability and this second has this probability. So I just flip the coin and the output will be like the number they put in the spin, either 0 or 1, okay? So the idea here, yeah, I'll just define how the compute properties, and then if you're still confused, just let me know, okay?
Okay.
So the idea here is that we computed sigma sequentially. So sigma 1, sigma 2, until sigma n. And as we said last time, the probability of this spin configuration can be computed. Yeah, I just erased it. It's okay. So if you remember, we said that the probability of this spin configuration can be computed sequentially, meaning that this can be decomposed as a chain rule. Okay? Until sigma 1. Okay? So just to clarify what we did here, so basically, because we have this, the luxury to decompose the probability, the full probability distribution into the product of conditionals, what we did is we computed this probability using an RNN. That's exactly P sigma 1 encoded in this vector. And what we did is we sampled. So we sampled sigma 1 from this probability. That's what I meant here by flipping a coin and then get in sigma 1, OK? And then once we get sigma 1, we fed it back to the RNN along with this memory vector to get the conditional probability P sigma 1 conditioned, sigma 2 conditional sigma 1. And that's going to be, and this is exactly this vector. So what we did is, again, we flipped the coin according to this probability to get sigma 2. And then we took sigma 2 and we fed it back to get sigma 3, and so on and so forth, until sigma n. Okay? So all I wanted to know here is that we decompose the problem of sampling a full spin configuration into a sequential sampling. Instead of having to do, so as you saw before, like when you do some metropolis, you sample a full spin configuration without having to do this. Okay? But this is easier because like you only have a bunch of coins that you're gonna flip to get the full specification. Okay? That's the main idea. And this is called, this is what we call ultra-aggressive sampling. Before moving on, I would like first to make sure everyone is understanding this. Do you still have any confusions about this first?
Yeah, I think like having a hard time. So like, we know, what does it mean to sample sigma one from P when we already know what our sigma one is? Like if we have a spin configuration or to start with?
Ah, so.
Or is that what's happening here or no?
Oh, here, do you mean, here sigma zero is actually just as a null vector, right? So we don't have any knowledge about the first spin. Basically, this probability like tells you which probability we can get either up, down spin or up spin.
Yeah.
You actually don't know what it is because we don't feed in what's sigma one. We don't know what it is. We just start with some initialization. Okay.
First two numbers would. Is there a good chance that they'll both be 0.5, 0.5?
Yeah. So for example, typically if you have like a spin, like a model with like a flip symmetry, like let's say you have the Heisenberg model where if you flip the z-axis, nothing changes, then you would have this symmetry. Because like if you either start with the up or down, nothing changes. So typically here you would get 0.5, 0.5. But if you were, for example, have some magnetic field on the z-axis, you would probably start with this would be 1, or let's say 0.99, and here will be 0.01. And then there you flip the coin, of course, like you would get like most likely this most often compared to this. Okay? But the thing is here, like this is different from the language because here, if I were to flip the coin, it's gonna have 10,000 faces. So that's hard. So basically we just pick the word that has the highest probability. But here, we can do sampling because it's easier to sample from like low dimensional distribution just with two inputs. Okay? Yo, is this the confusion, the source of the confusion?
Yeah, so are we just generating like a configuration?
Yeah, so just like you can think of it like a random like number generation from a certain probability.
Okay, so like you're inputting, so this spin configuration at the top row is something that you're generating as a sample.
Exactly, yeah.
And use on like the variance.
Yeah, So basically we sample like a bunch, we don't only sample one, we can do this many, many times. And those exactly will be the ones we're gonna use for important sampling.
Okay,
makes sense for everyone? Yeah.
So with the language example though, we had most of the sentence beforehand. So like in that case, I don't understand how we're, so here we're getting our sigma one and then we're—
Exactly, yeah, that's a good point.
Generated it.
Exact point, yeah,
we're
exactly.
Not generating the word.
Yeah. That's a good point, yeah. So the example, yeah. Yeah, that's, yeah, sorry about that. Because like, those are like two different tasks. So this is like a sentence completion and this is like, I would say like a sentence generation because we generate a bunch of spins. But we could also do the same thing here. I could start like, for example, if I have like the first half of the chain, I would feed that to the RNN and then the RNN would give me the second half. So I could do the same thing here. So let's say I have like for a spin with a spin configuration with four spins, then if I have the knowledge of two, for example, if let's say I'm in the paramagnetic phase, then I would expect that these two would be up. So what I do is I feed those into an RNN. So each one into an RNN. And then I get this vector, which is the memory state. This will be exactly the context of, it's going to memorize the history over these spins so that we can predict the next spins.
Okay, but I guess I don't understand like the details of like when you're feeding it into the neural network. So you'd feed the two spin configurations into two different?
No, it's the same, yeah. So here it's like, because like here we're using our current neural network, we use the same block.
I mean, you're putting in it like, So you wouldn't put in like all your known configuration into like sigma zero for?
Oh no, no, no. This is just like a null vector. We pretend we don't know anything.
Okay.
Because basically, if you already know what's the configuration, there's no point of doing this. So basically, we start with some initialization. This is also a bunch of zeros.
Mm-hmm.
And then we first compute the first probability, we sample the first spin, and then we do this again and again and again.
Okay, but like going from, say you have your two spins there and you have your first one, you'll get a probability you compute, but you're not going to use it because you know the next one.
Yeah. So basically, there, the first conditionals, so here, this is going to be one, this is going to be one.
Okay.
But here, because we don't know, it's going to be not like something between zero and one. Okay?
Okay. All right.
Makes sense, right? Yeah.
So you mentioned if you had like an external field, like so where would you input that information? Would it be in like this vector?
Yeah, that's a good point. Yeah, that's exactly going to be encoded in the gradient descent. So the information about the gradients is kind of like has information about the model. So the Hamiltonian has all them. This is going to be actually encoded here, because that's if you look at the expression of the local energy, you see there are matrix elements. And there you have the information about anything about the Hamiltonian. Okay? It's going to become clear in a second. Just, yeah. So now after we are able to estimate to get the samples, let's see how can we do gradient descent. So, So we said that and after we're able to estimate the variational energy, let's look at the local energies. So we said that the local energy is defined as the sum of sigma prime, h sigma, sigma prime, the ratios of the amplitudes. This is Rnn, sigma prime, over psi Rnn, sigma, okay? So now the issue is that these are not necessarily positive. These are going to be complex, right? So how can we use an RNN to predict to solve this issue? So in this case, we're going to just consider. So in this case, we're going to consider what we call stochastic Hamiltonians. They are defined as follows. So basically, if you have some Hamiltonian H, then if all the matrix elements sigma prime defined as this, then so if all of these are negative, then by what we call the Perron-Frobenius theorem, we know that the ground state of that Hamiltonian has positive amplitudes. So if you pick any sigma, then if you compute the amplitude, then this is positive, okay? The cool thing about this is that since all of these are positive, then we can take an RNN, we can take psi RNN as just the square root of the probability that generated by the RNN that's computed sequentially as a product of conditionals. We have P sigma 1, P sigma 2, conditioned on sigma 1, and so on and so forth. Okay? And so with this, we can compute these ratios, and then hence compute everything, and then compute the local energies, and hence we'll be able to compute, where's that? Yeah, compute the variational energy and also the gradients, okay? But also, but in general, if those are complex, if we don't have the case of these Hamiltonians, if we're not in that case, but in general, we could use what we call complex RNN wave functions. So if you're curious, you can read more about it in this paper. Okay. So now, just as an illustration, I would like to apply this idea to the transverse field Eisen model, which is also stochastic. So as an application, so I'm gonna consider the case of the transverse field Eisen model in 1D, where the Hamiltonian is defined as a two-body term, the couplings between neighboring spins with sigma I z, sigma I plus 1 z. So that's the ferromagnetic coupling minus the effect of a transverse magnetic field, which is denoted here by an application of sigma I x Pauli matrix. Okay? So as you see here, this is a non-diagonal term. So if you work in the z basis, this will be a non-diagonal term. Yeah.
Sorry, just going back here, we're
explaining
what it means for it to be stochastic. So it's that h sigma sigma prime is less than zero when sigma is
Thank you for pointing that out. So yeah, so this should be a non-diagonal term. So this is really important. So here the non-diagonal terms should be negative, and so that we can have this result here. Thank you, Lauren. Yeah. So if we apply this result here, if we're using, like if you're thinking about the same idea there, this is a non-diagonal term. So if you look at here, this all the non-diagonal terms will be negative. H sigma sigma primes will be negative. Okay? And that's why we know that the ground state of this model is positive. And hence we can use what we call here, I forgot to mention it. So using this idea, using this convention amounts to using what we call a positive RNN wave function. Okay. So just to show you exactly how this works in practice, showing the computer, how can we train those RNNs? Yeah. Can I please have the screen down? Oh, thank you. First, gonna show you in this notebook how can we, it's going to be also useful in the tutorial. Oh, thank you. Am I connected? Oh no, let's see.
Okay.
I hope it's gonna work. Yes. Okay, so. Yeah, thank you, appreciate it. No, I think, is this clear for everyone?
Yeah.
Yeah, thank you. Yeah, so as usual, I'm just gonna need to log in. So. Yeah, sorry about that. So basically, what we're going to do here is we're gonna compare the ground state energy that's gonna be computed by the RNN with the result of exact diagonalization, okay? So first, we're going to take the transverse field Eisen model, and we're going to diagonalize it. So you're welcome to see this, like to read this in the tutorial and understand what's going on here. We're basically doing exact diagonalization. And here, I'm going to diagonalize the transverse field Eisen model with only 8 spins, okay? In the tutorial, we're going to see more. So that's exactly the exact ground state energy. And I'm going to now train a positive RNN wave function to find the ground state of the same model with 8 spins, okay? So if you look at those parameters, so this is, look here, this is the system size, it's 8 spins. This is the, like here we're taking the magnetic field V1. We did the same thing for exact diagonalization. So that's exactly the critical point. And here, the number of memory units, that's exactly the dimension of the hidden state. We took it to be 10. We can also increase it, and you would be also able to increase it in the tutorial. Also here, the number of samples, meaning how many samples I take from the RNN. I just take it to be 200. You can also increase it after. And this is the activation function I take. This is exactly the function F, the nonlinear activation I use to compute the hidden states. I took it here to be tangent, but you can also change it in the tutorial. And this is just the learning rate I use to the gradient descent, okay? So I should mention also that the weight matrices and the biases we saw in the definition of the recurrent neural network are exactly the variational parameters. So we're just doing the gradient descent on those parameters to find the ground state, okay? So now let's see if this is working. Moment of truth. So now you see, start from the very high variance, and as we move on, see the variance is decreasing more and more and more until you get close to very small variance. And then if we compare with exact diagonalization, you see in the beginning we start from a very high variational energy, and then as we train, you move on to get closer and closer. Okay, that's cool. So, and also, like before, and in the lecture, I'll just show you some of the results, some of the things we can find with these RNNs. Just quickly move on to some of the results of these RNNs. So instead of doing it for just a small amount of spins, we can even do it for a very large number of spins, or even we can do it with 1,000 spins. So here we define the relative error, so the difference between the energy defined by the RNN and the exact energy. You can find that here the relative error defined by the green color here gets to be very small as you train more. And also the same thing for the variance, which is here, which should also be expected to be very small. And not only we can estimate the energy, we can also estimate observables. So that's like the thing we need to understand the physics. We need correlation functions and entanglement entropies. You see that also they agree with the exact results. And also this works in 2D. Like it's not only, we can also generalize this setup to two-dimensional spin lattices. As you saw in this lecture, we only did it as a 1D sequence, like in language, but this can be also generalizable to what we call 2D RNN, which is pretty happy. Like it's pretty like already like as the state of the art of all the numerical methods in the literature. So this is like not the only end. Like there's still a lot of work to be done in terms of these architectures. So they open like a lot, there are lots of questions in terms of how can we find the ground state of more challenging problems that are relevant to the real world, like frustrated spin systems or molecular systems that we still don't understand very exactly. We only do some ideal models for those, like we model the interaction between the atoms, like some potentials, like the Lennard-Jones potential or some others that are not always ideal. Or so basically, we need to study those systems in order to understand better how the atoms interact in some molecule. And can we also like use this framework in not only to find the ground state, but also the first excited states? And also there's a lot of space for improvement in terms of using more advanced architectures. So we can also use more advanced RNNs that we called LSTMs, long short-term memory. So those are like the state of the art of machine learning and speech recognition. And we can also use transformers. So I hope is that like if you use these architectures, that those models will become more and more powerful. And also, can we use those problems to solve optimization problems? So I would say like there's a lot of promise in this approach. And also, I'll be more than welcome to, like, if you're curious about this, I'll be happy to talk to you more about these ideas. Okay. So that, like, I thank you for your attention. And yeah, I'm really happy to talk to you more about this. So thank you for your attention. Okay.
So thank you, Mohammed.
Thank you.
This was a great course.
Oh, thank you. Oh, I don't have to. Thank you. Thank you, Lauren. Appreciate it. Thank you.
Let's thank him again.
Oh, thank you.